While you were hard at work,
I've been working on the railroad.
So were we, compiling the day's biggest news stories that matter most to you in a neat little one-hour package. It's the KABC News Blitz.
6:05 The Time, Talk Radio 790 KABC is the place. I'm Royal Oaks, your host for the News Blitz every Monday through Friday, 6 to 7 p.m. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for tuning in to the News Blitz. We every day stuff the day's biggest, most infuriating, or weirdest, or most hilarious stories into a single hour. You were so lucky. This is efficient to get this all in 1 hour. Every day you're going to hear at least three stories that will shock and amaze you. That is my promise to you. If you can make a promise back to me, tell your friends. If you like the show, tell your friends. Word of mouth is very cool. So let's get it on. Top stories. First, who won the GOP debate last night? Who's likely to drop out because nobody likes them? We'll do a postmortem. We'll get your take. We'll hear from Sean Steele of the Republican Party. In addition, it's official, we're surrendering to crime in Los Angeles. We're being told to lock our cars while we're pumping gas. I'm going to repeat that. We're being told by the authorities, lock your cars while you pump gas at the Arco station. Why? Because some sneaky guy recently, while a lady was pumping ethyl into her Prius, he snuck into her car and stole her purse. So, yeah, we've surrendered to crime. We'll get into that big time. There's light at the end of the homelessness tunnel. On Sunday, this Sunday, a new program kicks in where a judge can order crazy, dangerous street people to be connected with a mental health practitioner. And later in the hour, believe it or not, judges in California are actually fighting back against ordinances that try to take your guns away. So before we get to our esteemed guest, Sean Steele, I know a bunch of you are interested in traffic out there, right? So I need a little help when it comes to freeway traffic here in Los Angeles. I shouldn't need help. I've lived here my whole life. I was born here. I went to Canoga Park High School, went to UCLA, lived on the west side, and then I moved to the east side. And so I have been along the lovely Santa Monica Freeway a lot over the last many years. And then, you know, for a long time, I commuted on the 2 freeway and the 5 freeway into the harbor. So I know Los Angeles traffic, okay? I'm not a newbie here. But this is my first week hosting the News Blitz on KABC. And my routine every day, since I live on the east side of town, I drive on the Santa Monica Freeway, the 10 to the station. It's not a terrible drive. Traffic isn't usually too bad. But every single day this week, as I'm gliding along relatively trouble-free westbound on the 10 freeway, I see these poor people, you, stacked and stacked. I guess the British call it chock-a-block on the eastbound Santa Monica Freeway. I mean, basically wall-to-wall from the San Diego Freeway to the harbor. What is happening here? I mean, the first day, okay, there was a motorcycle accident at the intersection of the harbor and the Santa Monica. I get it. Every once in a while, somebody buys the farm on the motorcycle. But this has been every single day this week. I mean, are flying saucers landing in South Central L.A.? Are people rubbernecking, you know, looky-loos? They can't keep their eyes on the road. What is happening on the 10? I'm sure the fact they're closing down the Marina del Rey freeway, or thinking about it, or replacing it with a homeless encampment, that'll only make the situation better, right? I mean, I guess I could understand if there's some double-decker, you know, tour of the movie star's homes bus with a guy with a bullhorn. Say, if you look to your right, you'll see the Martians have landed in South Central Los Angeles. Nothing to worry about. I'm sure the authorities have it under control. I didn't see a double-decker bus. I didn't see any exhaust fumes coming from a flying saucer. I just saw a lot of really pissed-off drivers. So I got that off my chest. If you want to get it off your chest about traffic and shutting down the freeway, 1-800-222-KABC. But first, we are delighted to be joined by our friend Sean Steele of the California Republican Party to talk about the big debate last night and the upcoming GOP convention in lovely Anaheim. Sean, how are you?
Better than ever, and it's great. It was a lot of fun last night. If you like mud wrestling, that was the place to be.
Yeah, you know, it was a little bit like mud wrestling, and it's funny. I think people are getting used to kind of the food fight aspect of it. Maybe people even like it. I can't believe they haven't researched it and done all, you know, they do Oppo research. They got to do research about what people want to see in a debater. But I guess I have a pet peeve, and you're an insider, Sean. You probably know whether this has been floated. Do the candidates, are they ever told, hey, here's an idea, sir and ma'am. What if we warn you, you know, your time runs out, and then we give you 5 or even 10 seconds extra, you know, the red light, and then your mic turns off. I never see that in any debate. Do you know if that is even on the table as an option?
I think part of it is the excitement that then it's cut off, and I think the
excitement, like World Wrestling Federation excitement.
Well, you know, it's a struggle for minutes.
Yeah.
And it's very clear that some candidates get a whole lot of time, some candidates don't. And if you're lucky that somebody else mentions you in a bad light, you get 30 extra seconds.
Yeah, how stupid is that for somebody to mention someone in a bad light? Because they know they're giving them a chance to talk more, to rebut, to get the last word. Why would they do that?
Exactly. Plus, you got seven people, and you got a couple of guys who are probably not going to see them again. And this is their last chance. I think it's going to get a lot more meaningful. What I'd like is something a little more virtual, given, you know, the new age, and, you know, basically have a lot more time with somebody that has to answer questions without a whole lot of interruptions. On the other end, there's something nice about seeing a nice sport like an old-fashioned debate where everybody's, you know, trying to make – because, you know, if you're too loud, you're too obnoxious, you're too shrill, you're hurting yourself.
Yeah, when you say old-fashioned, so I'm not sure Abe Lincoln threw mashed potatoes at Douglas, but, you know, you're right. It's a modern kind of thing.
Those are two-hour debates.
Chautauqua circuit, they went on for days and days. When you said virtual, were you referring to virtuous or like computer type stuff?
No, we're talking about computer.
Yeah,
type.
I know. I was just my idea of a little joke.
And, yeah, I know, but it's still, you know, a little more thought. You know, kind of like a Rogan concept where you actually have time to answer a question. You can understand your thinking, and of course, they're all doing that anyhow. They're all on programs, anything they can get on, and so. But you put them all in one big container, and you know, it's bound to pop. And you know, we've seen some surprises. The point is, it went by pretty fast. It was pretty entertaining.
Yeah. We're talking with Sean Steele of the Republican Party. And so, Sean, you know, Larry Elder was on with John Phillips earlier today on KBC, and Larry made a point, and I was wondering what your comment is about it. His point was that it was kind of astounding that none of the seven candidates really said much negative stuff about Trump, even though traditionally, you know, the big guy, the front runner, that's all you do is you just try to drag him down. He was saying that nobody brought up the indictments or the election denier position. Nobody criticized his substantive policies. And so I'm wondering what your thought about that is. What does that tell you? I mean, does it say that the seven really are running for number two, which could mean they either want to be VP under Trump, who's ahead by 40 points plus, or they just want to be, you know, number one if Trump dies or goes to prison, but they're really not thinking there's a realistic chance to overtake the big guy?
Well, let's give Chris Christie a little opportunity here.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Good point.
He just thrives in being the anti-Trump. And, of course, Ron DeSantis, you know, is trying to be careful, trying to be governor, trying to, you know, he's the guy with the best resume. And I really think he does have the best resume. And, but he had to put a couple of pot shots out there. But, no, I think three of them are definitely running for vice president under Trump. And you'll just have to guess who the three are, because I was constantly thinking, you know, why would they do that? Why are they in that position? And then you got a couple that are really running for president, and we get a long ways to go. My gosh, every single day things keep changing in the political spectrum. You know, is Joe Biden going to fall down again and have a really hard time getting up?
Is he going to smell some young girl's hair?
Yeah. Well, that wouldn't be unusual, and you know that wouldn't even get any press, unfortunately. but if he can't get up, that'll worry a lot of people. You know, he's got balancing exercises on, you know, physical therapy, but he keeps wandering off the stage and ignoring people and bumping into flags. It's embarrassing.
Oh, it's amazing, Sean. My theory, Sean, is that, you know, remember the movie Weekend at Bernie's? They're going to make a documentary.
Yeah.
It's going to be Weekend at Biden's, and you know, it'll be all over again.
A long, long weekend, and you know how they're, you know, basically using this. And I think we got a good case for elder abuse. So you know that's something his family might. Unfortunately, the family's deeply involved in the abuse of an elder. So that's and then on our side, Trump has got so many minefields he's got to tackle, and I just don't see how a human being can possibly take four indictments all at the same time with nasty. Bad jury pools in highly Democrat cities that are beyond corrupt. It you know, you almost have to be a superhuman to be able to take that kind of abuse, and he has to spend so much money on lawyers. Oh, my gosh. We're talking about tens and tens and tens of millions of dollars.
Well, you're right, but, I mean, look at it from a different direction, Sean. I mean, when these indictments started, Trump was only ahead of DeSantis by, I think, maybe 3 or 4 points, like 42 to 38 or something like that. Right. And then, boom, 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 one after the other, the indictment bumps, the mugshot bump.
Five points.
Yeah.
Another indictment, 5 more points. Yeah, there's a lot of sympathy. I sympathize. I mean, the political persecution that's going on is transparent. Everybody can see it. We can smell it. You have, Democrat prosecutors that campaigns it. They're going to get Trump. Any judge in the world would take something like that and throw it out. It's extremely prejudicial. And so it's something that a lot of Americans are riveted just watching this abuse of the process. And where you can't forget that. It's completely corrupted when they're targeting a man, and it's political persecution at its worst.
Yeah, and I think the key, Sean, is the independents are joining the Republicans in the weaponization of the legal system theory. And that's critical for a great result for Republicans next year because, I mean, all the four indictments, Stormy Daniels, give me a break. And now, the civil lawsuits of the defamation stuff. And now the deal we're hearing about in New York, about this judge in New York City saying, he's going to fine Trump $250 million and take Trump a tower away from him. I think this just feeds into the narrative. Isn't it a huge gamble? It's like in chess, a gambit is where you give up your rook because you think you can get their queen later. It's a bad loss, but you think you can. The Democrats seem to be saying, okay, we'll give it up here. We'll make sure Trump is like the hero, and he goes way up, and nobody's talking about DeSantis, but then the gambit will work because next year Trump will be so weakened, maybe you'll have a conviction or two, and then Trump, the only guy in the world we think that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris can beat, he's on the ballot in November. Seems like that's their strategy, but isn't it a gigantic risk?
It's clearly the strategy, and Trump thinks he can beat that because there's going to be a lot of court of appeals, and judges, particularly on the federal level, aren't going to buy the stuff that's going against Trump. These are weak cases. They've always been weak cases. They're politically oriented. You got a lot of suspected witnesses at the same time, and you got politically driven prosecutors. And the country sees what's going on with the Department of Justice, even with the FBI, and it's made them strangely unpopular. It's a huge gambit because here's what happens. What happens if Trump wins? And Trump's made it very
clear. It's going to be a very sad day for Democrats. If we thought they were going nuts when he beat Hillary, oh my gosh, can you imagine the gnashing of teeth at this point?
He was taming those 4 years, and so. Also, Trump's learned a lot. He's learned that he doesn't have to appoint the first shiny penny that he finds. He's going to be a lot more methodical about who about half the people he appointed in the Capitol were not too good. They were not loyal. They went after him. They were disloyal, and some of them just absolutely enemies of Trump. So I think he's learned a lot about how to govern. I certainly hope so, because you just can't be appointing bad people that are going to betray you, in a short period of time.
Yeah. Sean Steele, you are an expert on the Republican Party, in particular here in California. Tell me, I mean, when I was growing up, it was back and forth. We get Reagan, then we get Jerry Brown, then we get Duke Majan and Wilson, then we'd get Gray Davis, back and forth. This has now become like a one-party state. And if we can't get back in the saddle as a Republican Party with homeless encampments just dotting the entire state with the crime and the woke DAs, I mean, how do you exploit that? What's the silver bullet to get us back in the game?
Well, there's one demographic reality. 4.5 million people have fled California in the last 25 years. Two-thirds of them are Republican and or conservative. What does that mean? It means we're exporting Republicans to Florida, Texas, Tennessee, and the Carolinas and elsewhere. That's a big deal. Ironically, we've grown in the last 2 years, 300,000 new registered Republicans. That seems to be contrary to the general drift, but there's 5.3 million Republicans was what we had in Reagan. The trouble is there's twice as many Democrats. And so what we do is that we clawed back 5 congressional districts in the last 2 elections, federal elections, that helped tip this House of Representatives for Republicans nationally. And we're making tremendous strides in the very Latino Central Valley, where we have districts that are 16 points Democrats voting Republican. we should be picking up two more additional congressional seats. So you don't win the state all at once. There's not that balancing act, but there's strong islands and pockets of conservatives that are finally getting on board. But here's the biggest secret of all: schools. People understand the schools are bad. They're rotten. They're doing bad things to children. And parents, mama bears, are showing up, and we're going to be having a whole lot of new school board candidates this year.
Yeah, talk about a dinner table issue. All right, Sean Steele, he's been the Republican National Committee member from California since 08. He's voted by his colleagues to the Executive Committee of the Republican National Committee in 2018. I know you're going to be down at the convention in Anaheim. I hope to see you there, and best of luck. Thanks for sharing part of your evening with us.
It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be the biggest attended convention in California Republican Party history. You've got four presidential candidates. It's at the Anaheim area. Don't hesitate. I got a cigar party. Everyone's welcome. How about that? Everyone's welcome. A chocolate fountain and a cigar party Friday night. Come on down.
Can't go wrong with that. Thanks for talking, Sean. See you soon. Bye. The time is 6:21. I'm Royal Oaks, your host for the News Blitz here on KBC every Monday through Friday, 6 to 7 p.m. When we come back, yeah, it is official. We're surrendering to crime in California and in particular in Los Angeles. We'll get your take. We'll give you a few examples. 1-800-222-KABC if you'd like to be on the air. Now let's check on traffic. 6:25 the time, Talk Radio 790 KABC. I'm Royal Oaks, your host for the News Blitz. Yeah, we have surrendered to the crooks here in Los Angeles and California in general. It's just astounding. If you've got thoughts on this issue, 1-800-222-KABC, 1-800-222-5222. So here are my thoughts. Instead of deterring and punishing criminals, we have surrendered. I don't know if you heard John Phillips. He talked about a lady's purse being stolen while she was pumping gas. So what's the solution by the government? Are they going to go after the bad guys? Are we going to have more police? Are we going to change some misdemeanors to felonies? No, no, no. They say harden your target by locking your doors, locking your car doors while you're pumping gas. Thanks very much. And this is on top of the advice that we've been getting. Don't leave anything visible in your car. Chewing gum, a half-drunk bottle of water, really anything that could encourage people to, you know, just smash and grab. And this is on top of, a few months ago, you remember the stories, but people going out in Beverly Hills, don't wear anything nice out in public. Oh, you've got that nice necklace or the fancy watch or something. No, don't do that. We're getting to the point where we're a lot like the folks in South America. I was talking to a friend of mine from Argentina, and he said, you know what the advice down there is? The police say, look, if you're going to go out and if you're going to drive, drive very fast through Rio. And, oh, whatever you do, don't drive after dark. You're going to be carjacked. If you're driving slowly and at a leisurely pace, they'll get your car. And certainly after dark, you're totally fair game. Are we really so far from that? How hard can it be to dump the living embodiment of the scandal, namely our district attorney, George Gascon? You know, there was a shoplifter in Riverside yesterday that has to get the chutzpah award. Did you hear about this story? A woman accused of shoplifting at a nail supply store in California. This is not carpenter's nails. It's the other kind of nails. She returned to the building after realizing she left her phone with her driver's license in the phone in the little holder. The woman, who with a second suspect, targeted the nail supply store. It was in Murrieta, actually. And the two women went into the store pretending to buy the supplies. And when it came time to pay, the suspects instead ran out of the building with about $600 worth of items. How interesting, $600. I think that's below the $950 threshold that the Democrats have pushed through in California that said, you know, if you steal something worth less than $950, that's not a felony. That's just a misdemeanor. And guess what? The woke district attorneys don't prosecute misdemeanors anymore, at least some of them. One of the suspects returned to the store after realizing her phone and her ID were still at the business that she had shoplifted from, and she demanded her phone back. And the store owner and the clerk said, well, we can give you your phone back if you'll return what you stole from us. So, did the robber make peace? No. The suspect threw the owner to the ground and roughed up the cashier, who was pregnant. Both suspects were eventually arrested about a mile away from the store. Thank God criminals are not rocket scientists. So we'll follow up on this case and report back to you. What do you bet? Maybe the charges will be dropped. I mean, from the point of view of the DAs, we shouldn't be criminalizing more of the population. Well, yeah, we're the ones who are criminalizing the population. Criminals have nothing to do with that. It's mindful of that story about catalytic converters a couple of months ago. Remember that? Somebody said, oh, let's increase the penalty. You know, it's just not harsh enough. We've got too many catalytic converters being ripped off. And what do the politicians say? Some councilman lady here in Los Angeles? She said, oh, no, I don't want to criminalize more people. It's Detroit's fault, really. Yeah, it's not enough to put the converter under the car and attach it to the car. No, Detroit has to add Gorilla Glue to the mix. Just totally stunning. But that's the situation here in California. When we return, I'm going to tell you about an amazing story out of the New York Times. New York Times just, they can't handle the idea that a progressive bastion like San Francisco is a sewer. So they ran a giant story about how it's just not that bad. All the residents are really happy. You will not believe what the New York Times is trying to peddle. We'll talk about that after we return. Right now, we got headlines, and our number is 1-800-222-KABC. Stick with us. 6:36 the time, Talk Radio 790 KABC, Royal Oak, your host for the News Blitz. Yeah, I know you're stuck on the road. I just drove in on the Santa Monica Freeway. I feel your pain. You were going the other direction toward the east. Oh, my gosh. So we're going to talk about this wacky New York Times article trying to explain that San Francisco is just a wonderful place. But first, I have to say, this is, Wayman, I don't know, did you used to order like Netflix DVDs that come in the mail? You remember that for years ago? Okay. Tomorrow, Wayman, is a historic moment. The last DVD ever mailed out by Netflix will be tomorrow, and then that's it. That is the story. I mean, before all the streaming, that's how we got movies. You know, you didn't want to go to Blockbuster. You just order a movie from Netflix, you watch it, and you send it back. And of course, if you don't send it back, they charged you like $100 or something. And that was not good. But this is the story. I'm wondering, what is the last movie going to be? The last movie ever sent out to somebody in a red and white envelope. The problem is, what if it's something like, you know, Hot Tub Time Machine 2, or Weekend at Bernie's. I mean, I was talking to Sean Steele about how they're going to do the documentary version of Weekend at Bernie's, and of course it's Weekend at Biden's. But the only difference is I think the guys dragging Bernie around, you know, they made him look like, you know, he was kind of hip and cool and moved with some smoothness and grace. He didn't shuffle around and trip over sandbags and shake hands with people who weren't there, and he didn't sniff the hair of 9-year-old girls. So anyway, I think the last guy that orders a Netflix movie, whatever it is, even if it's Hot Tub Time Machine 2, and I like the original, he should get lifetime free Netflix. Don't you think that's fair? I cannot imagine they wouldn't do that. They'd have to be pretty cheap creeps to not do that. Speaking of creeps, the New York Times folks, they cannot handle the idea of a progressive bastion like San Francisco being a sewer. So they run this story the other day about happy residents in San Francisco. I'm sure it makes all the victims of, you know, assault and rape and car break-ins feel much better. Oops, I stepped on a syringe. Sure, I'll get my AIDS test, but my, the weather is beautiful today. Look at the architecture. It simply can't be that a progressive oasis is a hellscape. No, no, no. We'll write a feel-good piece about how San Franciscans say their beloved city is getting a bad rap. Crime's just a form of diversity, right? There are rule followers, and then there are free spirits. Those who take their fentanyl with a twist of poop and needles. And for garnish, bits of smashed glass from one of the 100 car windows smashed every day in the city by the bay. So here's what the New York Times learned in their investigation. I wonder if they put Woodward and Bernstein. Oh, no, that was Washington Post. Anyway, somebody named Karen Mather moved from New York City for a job. Hey, not so bad, he said. You know, San Francisco's nice. He said, it's like going to New York and spending your entire time in Times Square, and your takeaway is every New Yorker is dressed like Cookie Monster. He tells his neighbors that San Francisco as a whole remains stunning, and its amenities world-class. According to the New York Times, there are hopeful signs. Several new parks have opened up in the city in recent years, including Tunnel Tops, where families flock on sunny weekends to picnic, stroll, and take in views of the bay. City has closed a couple of scenic thoroughfares to cars, most notably John F. Kennedy Park Drive and Golden Gate Park. So while downtown struggles, previously sleepy neighborhoods, we're told, are thriving. Thousands of people packed Irving Street and eating Asian delicacies and watching ballerinas dance in the road. Isn't that great? As you nurse your wounds and take your car in for installation of new windows, you can watch ballerinas dance in the road. That sounds like a lot of fun. Oh, and then they interviewed Tyler Florence, he owns a bakery in San Francisco. He told the New York Times, he offers the most ethereal croissants you've ever tasted. And one offers rotisserie chicken and rosé on tap. In August, a land use commissioner tried to organize a downtown doom loop walking tour where participants would pay $30 to see close-up views of urban decay in the Tenderloin neighborhood where homeless encampments and drug use are most visible. Then they got to Angela Hoover, age 25. She moved from Miami in July to run her AI company. That's probably going great guns. She wanted to be where the action was concerning AI, so she found a place near the panhandle of Golden State Park. She said she loved the small-town feel of her neighborhood, where she's gotten to know her local barista and grocer. So many of my friends told me I was crazy for moving to San Francisco. It's unsafe, it's filthy, it's going down the tubes. My experience has been the opposite. The beautiful neighborhoods, vibrancy and positivity, that message isn't getting out there. I guess we just need to listen harder, assuming our eardrums haven't been, you know, ruptured in an assault by a junkie going after a Rolex watch. So it's really sad what's going on up in San Francisco. Hey, we got breaking news today on the Trump front. You're familiar with the fact that Donald Trump has been indicted in the Georgia case in Atlanta, Georgia, and he's in state court there, which is the home court for the prosecutor, Fannie Willis. So Trump, along with a bunch of the other 19 or 18 defendants, have wanted to move the case from state court over to federal court. And Trump today announced through his lawyers he's not going to try to go to federal court after all. And this is, I mean, this is totally stunning to me. The only thing I can think of is that his lawyers told him, hey, the state court judge, Scott McAfee is his name, I think, he's kind of cool. You know, he hasn't really gone public with anything that would make you think that he loves you, but I think he'll give us a fair shake. So, you know, the devil you know is better than the devil you don't know. So let's sit tight. That's a possibility. But I can't believe that's really how it went down. I mean, I know this removal thing is inside baseball, but in the legal world, if you're being prosecuted in a state court, you have a right to go across the street to the federal court. Totally different system, totally different judges, different jury pool, much more diverse, more affluent counties that might be a little more friendly to Trump. And some of these judges in the federal court system were appointed by Donald Trump. So, you know, you go across the street and you say, hey, judge, how you doing? I'm entitled to move my case from state court to federal court if what I allegedly did was in the course and scope of my work as a federal employee. So the issue is, when Donald Trump was trying to challenge the election, was he doing it as part of his presidential duties, or was it a campaign thing? So far, the people trying to get out of state court and into the federal court in Georgia, like Mark Meadows, they've been slammed by the federal court judges who said, no, I'm just not going to go along with it. But some judges might be receptive to that. My gosh, I mean, if Donald Trump could somehow get into federal court, he could be looking up at a bench occupied by somebody he appointed to the bench. Now, I'm not saying they'd automatically rule for him, but, you know, based on what we see from Aileen Cannon, the federal judge in Miami handling that other indictment, who was appointed by Donald Trump, she's issued some rulings that are pretty good for Donald Trump. What do you think the chances are he could have gotten a pretty decent shake in terms of tough calls, timing of the trial, issues, rulings on motion, admissibility of evidence? Aren't you going to get a better shake from somebody you appointed to the bench? How do you give up on that possibility? How do you not even take a shot to remove it to federal court, even if it's a low percentage deal? I think there's no downside. I think it's weird. Maybe Donald Trump is getting some bad legal advice. 6:43 the time. Talk Radio 790 KABC. I'm Royal Oaks, your host for the News Blitz. Let's check on traffic. I'm Royal Oaks, your host for the News Blitz. You know, I mean, I think I recognize John Phillips' voice in that last promo. So, you know, yeah, he's going to get an extra check in the mail, I'm guessing. So, unbelievably, good news on the homelessness front. I'll get to that in a second, but I have to say, I don't know if you've noticed kind of a change in me during this week, Wayman. I don't know. But, you know, the first day, my first day as a host of News Blitz was Monday. You know, I came in and wearing a sport coat. And then the next day, I wore a dress shirt. And then yesterday, I wore jeans. And now I got sweats and the T-shirt, you know, the one that makes you look good, you know, takes care of the paunch and also the arms and so on. And the whole deal is, I understood, Wayman, I don't know if I got this from you, but I understood that, you know, here at the KBC Palatial Studios, supermodels like were coming in and out like sharks. And I haven't really seen the supermodels coming in and out of the studio. It's kind of strange. And this is my second major disappointment. A friend of mine has a house in Malibu with a nice infinity pool and a great backdrop. And so Playboy magazine actually rented it for a Playmate shoot. And so I heard about this, and so I called him up and I said, you know, you really need a legal advisor. You need a lawyer to be on premise. I mean, what if somebody says or does something inappropriate? You need a lawyer to advise. He said, no, we don't really want any more people. I said, are you kidding me? You're saying no? I have never, ever forgiven him. I told this story to Frank Motek as he was just getting off the air. Well, he was actually off the air already. I didn't want to bust in on the show. And I said to him, told him the story. And he started telling me about how he used to hang out at the Playboy Mansion. And great stories. And I said, you met the great man himself? Oh, yeah, many, many times. Don't you think Frank should, instead of a segment on, you know, how's Bitcoin doing? Very, very important and interesting, of course. But instead, how about a profile of what it was like to hang with Hugh Hefner? I think that might actually help the already massive ratings. All right, speaking of massive ratings, this program is going to, people are going to love it. It's all about solving the homelessness problem, and it's called the CARE Act, Community Assistance, Recovery, and Empowerment Act. It's the only good news I've heard in a long time on the homelessness front. So the debate has been marked by a very clear divide. Democrats, they just want to raise taxes, and they'd be able to say, during my time in office, we spent $50 billion to help their problem. And, of course, colossal failure. Seems like the more we spend on housing and hotel rooms and motel rooms, and, of course, Karen Bass wanted to save some money. She said, take a homeless person in. Let them live in your spare bedroom. Take two. They're small. It hasn't worked, okay? I don't know if anybody's actually taken her up on that. But on the other side of the coin, the Republicans say, you know, this isn't complicated, really. The great majority of people in the streets are there because of alcoholism and drug problems and mental illness. And until we help with those problems, they're going to continue to live on the streets, continue to reject the availability of shelter beds. Because if you go to a shelter, you can't do all the fun stuff like fentanyl and fistfights and drink an old English 800. I don't know if they still have that. Wait a minute. When I was at UCLA living in the dorm in Reber Hall, that was the drink of choice, was Old English 800. I mean, that was one tall, tall can. Anyway, that's what people, you can't do that at the shelter. So judges, unfortunately, are going to continue to stop police from taking down the tents and dismantling the encampments right across the street from people who work their whole lives to buy a nice house and then whammo, not a real good view out the picture window. So what's the reason for this optimism? Well, on this Sunday, October 1, it's the beginning of this new CARE Act program that will require at least a chance for mental health treatment for the homeless. It's a program allowing families of adults with serious, untreated psychotic disorders to file a petition in civil court for court-ordered voluntary treatment. You got clinicians and first responders, they can file a petition. If the petition is approved, a judge can order a year-long care plan, which can then be renewed for a second year. And so the person involved will be connected with a treatment plan and a housing plan. So this targets the most severely mentally ill among California's huge homeless population, many of whom have substance abuse issues as well. California has about 170,000 homeless people, the biggest homeless population in the country, according to a report from HUD. And nearly a third of the homeless, the country's homeless people, live in California. San Francisco has been in the throes, speaking of San Francisco, that is so wonderful. It's got these ethereal croissants, as I understand from the New York Times. San Francisco has been in the throes of a homelessness crisis for years, and it's only gotten worse since the pandemic. About 38,000 are homeless in the Bay Area on any given night. It's up 35% since 2019. So under this CARE court program, a petition for treatment must also include an affidavit from a licensed mental health professional saying that they at least tried to examine the person multiple times, or the petitioner has to submit evidence that the person was detained for a couple of periods of intensive treatment. So seven counties, including San Francisco, San Diego, and Orange counties, have to launch pilot programs by October 1, and the rest of the counties in California have to launch their CARE court programs by the end of next year. So this is the rare moment of good news, because other than that, you know, if it was just up to the politicians who just want to be on record of spending more money, this business about, you know, housing first, what was Karen Bass's phrase, inside first, something like that. You know, if we were in New York in the dead of winter, maybe inside first would be a swell idea. Here, Now, it's pretty balmy out there 24 hours a day, and these people need help. And at least this act gives the chance of getting them help. Amazing. This is a great idea. 6:53 the time. I'm Royal Oaks, your host for the News Blitz on Talk Radio 790 KABC. We're going to be right back. And when we are, I'm going to tell you some fascinating news about gun control in California. Stick with us. 6:57 the time, Talk Radio 790 KABC Royal Oak. Your host for the News Blitz every Monday through Friday, 6 to 7 p.m. Glad you decided to join us. So I'll get to the gun story in a second, but Wayman and I, during the break, were just chatting about the old English 800, and I was reminiscing about the fact that at the dormitory, Reber Hall at UCLA, where I lived for several years, our residence advisor, the guy that kept us in line, the senior, was Franklin Ajayi. And at the time, he was on his way to Columbia Law School. He was a senior at UCLA and wanted to be a lawyer. And if you recognize that name, Franklin Ajayi was a very, very successful comedian in the 1980s and beyond. He was an actor. He was in Deadwood. And poor Franklin, he had to ride herd on all these, the freshmen, sophomores in the dorm. And, there was some drinking of Old English 800 and other things were going on. As a matter of fact, right next to me, Bill Walton's best buddy lived in the room next to me, and Bill would come over. And every time Bill would come over, about 4 or 5 minutes after the door would close, the marijuana smoke would start billowing out from under the door. So I'm not sure if Franklin noticed that. So then Franklin goes off to Columbia, and within a year or two, we're sitting around the dorm, and who do we see on Johnny Carson doing his stand-up on Carson, The Tonight Show? It's Franklin Ajayi. He quit law school. He found a comedy mentor. He rocketed to the top to get to Johnny Carson. So, those were the days. So here's the deal on guns, and we're going to talk more about this tomorrow because it's a pretty big story, so I'll give you the details then. But just the highlight are Federal Judge Roger Benitez. He's down in San Diego. He has issued a ruling saying California had no legal right to ban gun magazines of greater than 10 rounds. He wrote that millions of removable firearm magazines able to hold between 10 and 30 rounds are commonly owned by law-abiding citizens for lawful purposes, including self-defense, and there was no legal basis for the restriction, and it violates the Second Amendment. How refreshing to actually get some common sense out of the judiciary to get a decision that actually respects people's constitutional rights. He said, one government solution to a few madmen with guns is a law that makes into criminals responsible law-abiding peoples wanting larger magazines simply to protect themselves. The history and tradition of the Second Amendment clearly supports state laws against the use or misuse of firearms, but not the disarmament of law-abiding citizens. Thank you, Judge. As I say, we'll talk more about this tomorrow. But for now, you all have a wonderful night. We'll see you tomorrow at 6 on KABC.